going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for an hour today and every weekday, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, here on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Sports Zone, the American Forces Network, the Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, the list goes on and on. This is the most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the whole entire world. Terrestrial radio, satellite radio, streaming over the internet. No way to not listen to Wrestling Observer Live every single day here on Sports Byline. We've had a very, very busy week here on this program. Rey Mysterio was on a couple of days ago. Wale was on yesterday talking pro wrestling. And today we are going to be previewing the weekend, taking your phone calls and more. Mike Sempervivi had a prior engagement today, so he will not be appearing on the program. But we will be bringing in Dave Meltzer here after the first commercial break. We'll be talking all of the news, UFC 185 this weekend, maybe some SmackDown thoughts, and so much more. And then your phone calls at 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478. If you'd like to send some questions via Twitter, my Twitter handle, at Brian Alvarez. If you'd like to send them via email, you may do so at brian@wrestlingobserver.com. And of course, I'd like to point out, since I rarely do, some other Twitter handles here. Mike Sempervivi is at Sempervivi. Sports Byline USA is at Sports Byline USA. Dave is at Dave Meltzer, W-O-N, for the Wrestling Observer newsletter, at Dave Meltzer, W-O-N. And since I don't think I ever plug it here, if you'd like to follow me on Facebook, it is facebook.com/Brian Alvarez. I put photos up and various news bits and that sort of thing, so you can follow me there as well. But as noted, we are going to head to our first commercial break, and when we come back, news heading into the weekend. Dave Meltzer will be joining us, taking your phone calls and emails, 855-478-4478. It's going to fly by today, but enjoy it. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Dave Meltzer, founder of Wrestling Observer Newsletter back in 1982. Correct, Dave?
Correct.
Just want to make sure I got the year right. It's been a long time since we have hosted this show here together. I don't even remember the last time. It's been years.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time.
That's right. Let's kick it off today by let's take a trip down memory lane. What are your memories of starting IATA? How did that whole thing get started?
Well, Bob Meyerowitz just called me one day and was starting up that network and wanted a pro wrestling show on the network. And I had known him from covering UFC. And so he hired me. I mean, like he was recruiting me for a while and I never took it seriously and I never thought I was going to do it or anything like that. And, you know, it just all of a sudden one day it was like they were on the air and I was offered a contract, and it was for enough money that it seemed like it was worth it. Although it was a really hard couple of years doing it, you know, working everything in. And so I did it. And the first show was like atrocious. So I think I don't remember if you called me or I called you, but it was like probably within about a week. You became the regular co-host.
I think it was like 3 days or something like that.
Oh, the first show was, it's like there's no publicity. So the first show, it's like I'm just begging people to call. And the first guest, by the way, that we ever had on the show was Chris Benoit, which is pretty eerie. And you were on the show like within very, very quickly. And actually, after that point, it went pretty smooth. But the first show was like 2 hours, felt like about 5 hours. Me trying to kill time with no phone calls and everything. But it was actually on internet radio. It was actually a landmark show because it was, as far as like, there were shows that were radio shows that were broadcast on the internet, but they were regular radio shows that were very successful. But as far as an internet only radio show, I mean, we were the highest rated show pretty quickly.
So had you done any, I mean, I presume that was the first time you'd done the Observer Hotline, obviously. That's how we met, in fact. But I mean, the idea, 2 hours, even if you've done this for a long time, 2 hours with no calls is a nightmare.
I actually did get a few calls, but they weren't enough.
Yeah.
I mean, the first couple of shows, I was like begging people to call. You know, once you were on, it was actually pretty easy from there. But yeah, the original, the first show was like a nightmare to me.
And how quickly, because I don't even recall this stuff, but how quickly were we on Sports Byline USA after Yada went under? It was pretty quick, if I recall.
Well, when Yada went under, Bob Meyerowitz wanted to start, you know, since we were the most successful show, he wanted to move it to regular radio and syndicate it. That was the idea. So that was pretty quick. I mean, you know, probably within a month or so. It was probably a little bit longer because the first one we did would have been the night of the Hogan Rock WrestleMania match. So it was a little bit after that. And then that, you know, we did the show from the Sports Byline studios. And then what happened was, the syndication thing didn't really work out because radio stations, weren't picking up on the idea of a pro wrestling show in 2002 all that quickly. So, and then the stations that did, you know, they didn't want intellectual discussion of pro wrestling, but they wanted something completely different. I mean, they wanted something that we could never do and would actually never be successful, but that's what they wanted. And, so that didn't end up working out. But as soon as that didn't work out, Sports Byline said, hey, look, you know, we want you. So that's how Sports Byline came into the picture, is that it just happened to be the studio. Yada was running the studio from Sports Byline that we did the show from. And then the Sports Byline people who were working it thought that, hey, you know, this could be a good addition to our network.
I never even knew that Yada was renting out Byline. I thought they just had the thing set up in your house.
No. They rent out Byline they had the thing set up for my house when we did the Yada show.
I never did
Yada from Byline. But when we did the radio show, they wanted it from a radio studio.
I see. Okay.
With a producer and everything like that. So that's where the thing started.
That makes sense. All right, well, in the next segment, everybody, we've got a little time here, but after the commercial, we're going to take your phone calls and emails for Dave and I, if you want to call in here today. And first off, this weekend, UFC 185 is coming up, and it is a pretty stacked show in terms of names. I don't know if it's going to be like a big marquee show in terms of how many people are going to buy it.
It's going to be really interesting because you know, every UFC show this year has been a success, either from a rating standpoint or from a pay-per-view standpoint. I mean, well above projections. And this is the first one where, you know, you look at it and you go like, well, on paper, this should do like 250,000 buys. And if it does more than that, it really says that, you know, UFC is on a hot streak. And and they are. But it's an interesting thing because there's an argument that John Jones Cormier build, which brought a lot of people back to UFC, is part of the reason why the next two shows both greatly exceeded most projections, especially the last one. I mean, the last one was literally double what a lot of people thought it would be. And you know, some of the ratings for these shows, like the Conor McGregor show, blew away every ratings record that they've ever had on FS1, and then the last show that they did, you know, every show's done well. I mean, better than expected, I would say, other than the Fox show, which probably did about what it was expected. I wouldn't say it did better, but I wouldn't say it did worse either.
So is Henry Cejudo going to make weight?
Cejudo? I don't have an answer to that. We'll know in a couple hours.
Didn't Chris Curry also flat out say, if you don't make weight, I'm not doing this fight?
I don't know what he said, but he'll be very pressured because I don't think they'll want to not do the fight. But if Cejudo misses weight, Cejudo will not be fighting at flyweight anymore because this is pretty much his one shot. Because he missed it once and Dana White already told him he had to move up to 135. He moved up to 135, made that weight easily and had a great fight and said, can I please try 125? And they said, yes, but this, you know, he doesn't make it now. Part of the problem is with some of these guys is they let their weight get too out of control between fights and they kill themselves to make it. If they just maintained if they maintained a weight at around, you know, 140, 145, 140 probably, it wouldn't be so bad. But I'm thinking he's probably, you know, walking around it a whole lot more than that.
Hendricks and Matt Brown is probably the biggest marquee fight. Johnny Hendricks has dropped a ton of off-season weight, and he looks great. It's going to be very interesting to watch this fight because I just know from training that when I am heavier, I'm stronger, but I don't feel as well. I'm not as fast, obviously. And when
you don't have the stamina, which is the most important thing in a
exactly.
fight.
Exactly. But when you drop weight, I mean, you do feel better. You are quicker, but you do recognize pretty quickly that you're not as strong.
I would guess the way that he's been training that the strength difference won't be nearly so much, because he doesn't look like he's lost a lot of muscle. In fact, he's far more muscular than he was. You got to remember the last two fights he came in, he didn't do the weight training before the fight, because with one fight he had the torn bicep and the other one he was recovering from the surgery from the torn bicep. So you're talking about a guy who's, let's say his real weight right now is let's say 187, which is what he was a couple of days ago. And before, his real weight was probably, you know, really as well, his training weight was probably 210. You're talking about a 210 guy without a cycle of weight training versus a 187 guy who's been weight training his ass off. And I think that while the 210 guy may be a little bit stronger and certainly, you know, from a base and being able to be moved around, yeah, it'd be harder. I don't think that the difference is going to be that great. Now, the other key is that in his two previous fights where he did get tired, well, I mean, the first fight, I can't say he got tired because he won the fifth round from Robbie Lawler, and that's how he won the championship in the first one. The second one, he clearly did get tired. Those were also five-round fights. This is a three-round fight. So in that sense, the heavier weight may not have worked against him and may have been to his benefit in the shorter fight, but he should still be stronger than Matt Brown. Matt Brown's a real test, though, because, you know, Matt Brown's one of those guys who is very difficult to mentally break the guy, and he's going to keep coming.
He's very tough.
Yeah, he's a very mentally tough guy. I think that Hendricks is going to know he's in a fight. I mean, he should win, but he's going to – it should be the fight of the night.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we are going to take your phone calls at 855-478-4478. Emails, brian@wrestlingobserver.com. Back in just a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline USA radio network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Dave Meltzer, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Going to take your phone calls, 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478. Couple of quick notes here. Remember, when you call, we have no call screener here, so please no profanity, number one. The phone is going to ring and ring and ring. Maybe you'll hear the program when it picks up. Maybe you'll just be on the air. But once we say you're on the air, it's your turn to get going. One call per day, please. So those are the rules. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Eddie from Maryland.
Eddie, what's up?
I want to know what's going on with Jeff Jarrett's company. I heard that they were supposed to start have TV tapings in at Las Vegas in May. So I just want to know what was up with that.
All right.
Right now, he doesn't have a TV deal lined up, so I don't know about that. I know he's negotiating with a number of stations, and I know that he does want to tape television out of Las Vegas, and he's there's been talk about a regular series. There's been talk about a one-time pilot two-hour TV special that would include, you know, wrestlers from all over the world. There's a lot of ideas that have been batted around. But nothing is official right now, other than the fact that I know he's talking to locations in Las Vegas, and that's about it, really.
So now the Vegas thing, I mean, he may just be doing, I don't know why he would do this without television, but just like an untelevised event?
It's possible he may do a house show as well. Yeah, he's talked about that, because I think one of the things that people have seen is that the crowds at independent shows, you know, drawing at an independent show used to be almost impossible. And you couldn't make money at it. I mean, certainly when TNA started, but without television, they were just having a hell of a time drawing. But right now, there are guys out there, or at least promotions out there, with certain guys that have been able to do, you know, 1,000 people. And if you charge, you know, $25 and everything like that, a promoter can make money with the right sponsorship, meet and greet. It's not... The independent thing is not a guaranteed money loser like it was for many, many years. Now, how long that will stay, I don't know. And a lot of that is because of the guys. There are certain guys out there, you know, like that have had that either have a cool factor right now, or some guys that have enough name recognition from, you know, years of television that are out there working independents, and you kind of mix them up. And you can get something. Now, of course, TNA and Ring of Honor are both very aggressively trying to sign their stars. And I don't know that either of those groups would let their guys work a show for Jeff. So that cuts back on your, quote, independent guys. I don't know if the Lucha Underground people will let their guys work, you know, on a show for Jen. They might, but I don't think so because, you know, you're talking about a guy who's very obviously wanting television, and that's the competition for those groups. So, but there's still talent out there, and certainly the New Japan guys and the AAA guys. AAA guys, a lot of them are under contract to Lucha Underground. But New Japan guys are not under contract as far as the United States goes. So, you know, if you mix some of those guys in with some other independent guys, you know, perhaps you can put together an attractive enough show to where it's okay. It's still going to be tough, though.
To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? Hello
this
there.
This is Baroni, and I'm calling from Heeltown, USA.
What's up, Baroni?
How you guys doing? Hey, Dave, how you guys doing? It's a pleasure to talk to you, Dave. I used to listen to you when you were on in Phoenix on 5 KGME, the first wrestling show in Arizona. It was awesome.
Oh, thanks.
But anyways, I'd like to get to this. All I've heard for my 30 years of watching wrestling is Vince is supposed to be a genius, you know, a savant in wrestling. All he does is eat, breathe, and sleep pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. And these days, what is going on? He lost the desire to be the creative genius he once was.
This garbage on television is
getting out of hand.
It's not
okay, hold on, Brony. Hold on, Brony. Go ahead, Dave.
It's not a lack of desire. Too much television to produce, which I think has created a bad effect. But the problem is that's where they're making their money. See, before they made their money on presentation of events, you know, like their pay-per-view events, their live events, that's where they made their money. Now their money is filling television time. That's the number one thing. That's the thing that's going to save them or make them, that in the network. But the rights fees are a lot right now far more important than the network. The network may, you know, break even, may make some money this year, but that's not going to carry, it's not making the money to carry the company. The TV rights is what's carrying the company. So that's the economic reality of the business. Unfortunately, there's things that can be done to fill the hours and it could be done way, way, way better. As far as Vince is as a genius, you know, I mean, I always thought that Vince had excellent wrestling instincts overall, big picture. I don't know that that's the case now. When I watch it now, I've really questioned it of late. So, really, really, you know, the last couple of months, it's been hard to watch this. But it's not just Vince. I mean, it's not like he's a one-man band, although he's the final guy. I mean, there's people there, and they have to confront him. And I don't know that anyone's confronting him and telling him that, you know, the idea of what should be, in theory, based on your preconceived notion of a star and what in 2015 as a star are two different things. And I don't think he's grasped it. And I don't think the people with him have grasped it because they're kind of in a, there's a mentality. And it's not just a Vince mentality. It's a television mentality. People in television think good looking people have to be on television. Like, and if you're not, you're not going to be as popular. Well, sometimes you're right. And sometimes you're wrong, but they've put themselves in this hole where it's like, it has to be, you know, even when the facts are telling you differently, well, they have to be wrong. And I think that's the problem. And another problem also is that the numbers that they go on, aren't really telling them anything, to a degree. So it reinforces what they already preconceive. So that's, I think, part of the issue right here.
Let me ask what probably sounds like a stupid question, but I've been thinking about this a little bit. When I think about these guys go through all this trouble to write this script, and then Vince comes in on Monday, and sometimes he'll tear the thing apart. Sometimes they're booking as the show is going on.
Absolutely.
Which did not help WCW one bit back when they did it there.
No.
It sounds goofy, but if some scenario occurred where they could not do Raw every week, and instead, once a month, they had to do 4 weeks' worth of television tapings over 2 days or something like that.
You have to be a lot more organized. But that's what TNA does.
But that's my question. Do you think it would be better if they were forced into doing something like this, as opposed to the way they do it now, where every Monday they just rewrite stuff and this doesn't make sense and they forgot about this and they just change their mind on this, I wonder if it would be better.
Well, you're locked in. Well, the thing is, though, is that I think that you from a logic or from a from a logic standpoint, yes, it would be better. But would it be better today, given that people it's so easy to access stuff? And I mean, I know, again, when they do a taped show, the rating is not down. So, but the argument is if you're watching a month old show, do you? Are people going to tune in today to a month-old show when they know it's a month-old show? And, I mean, with TNA, it didn't really make that much of a difference. Yet, you know, my gut still tells me that with some people it would. But, I mean, the point is it's that's not going to change. I mean, you're going to – this is what it's going to be like, and they're not going to stop – you know, they're not going to – especially when you got a three-hour Raw, what are you going to – you can't do a 12-hour TV taping. I mean, I guess you could do 3 hours for a week straight, and then you're done for a month. And yeah, it probably would make more sense for that month, but that's not going to happen either.
All right, to the phones, you're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Danny Hernandez from Dallas, Texas.
What's up, Danny?
Hi, Dave and Brian. My question is for Dave about when he was on the Donahue show with Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, like, Vince McMahon, he did want you to be there, right? He called you to be part of the panel. Is that correct?
No, absolutely not. No. The Donahue people called me. Vince, I would guarantee Vince did not want me to be there. No, no. I promise you, Vince didn't want me to be there.
And sitting next to you as well, like getting.
Oh, that wasn't really an issue. I mean, as far as I don't know if people know the story, but the original idea was for Bruno Sammartino and Vince McMahon to be the stars of the show because Bruno was a huge star in New York, and the show was taped in New York, and so they were positioned next to each other, and we're backstage, and Bruno had done a show with Larry King when they were in separate studios in different parts of the country a couple of days earlier, and in the show it was not pleasant. I mean, Vince said things that weren't exactly true, and in a sense try to make Bruno look bad by doing so. And Bruno was really, really upset. And Bruno was just like, if he lies, I don't know if I can help myself. You know what I mean? Like that. And it's just like, and I actually jumped in and I said, look, I don't care what he says. I'm not hitting him. So, you could put me next to Vince and won't be. So I essentially, because everybody else there didn't really want to be next to Vince, I said, look, I got no problem sitting next to Vince, so don't worry about it. You know, it's not like, and if something happens, I'll dive in between. You know, I mean, I don't think there was ever going to be any violence there, and there was no hint of it.
Man, that'd have been awesome.
But if Schultz was on, I think there could have been. And David Schultz, I don't know if...
Hold that thought right there, Dave. We'll pick it up when we come back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Dave Meltzer, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And if you like the show, you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. Two shows every day, including four, Wrestling Observer radio shows with myself and Dave every single week, only for subscribers. 3 to 4 new shows a week. We got 7,000 shows in the archives. There's a brand new Wrestling Observer newsletter every week. 35,000 words. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts. If you see news stories on the internet, I would suspect that about 90% of them started out in the Observer, and you can read it first as a subscriber at WrestlingObserver.com. We've got hundreds of newsletters in the archives, thousands of radio shows. I've said it a million times. If you like Wrestling Observer Live, you will love your subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. And I don't pay the callers who call in and tell you how awesome it is to subscribe. So check it out right now. WrestlingObserver.com. Dave and I are going to be up later on this weekend as well with a brand new Wrestling Observer Radio. Lots of shows up there. Plus, if you ever miss this show, it drops right into the archives about 5 minutes after the show goes off the air. So do not miss out as a subscriber at WrestlingObserver.com. And before the break, you were telling the story, Dave, of what might have happened if David Schultz had been on Donahue.
Yeah, because when I went there, David Schultz was one of the guests that was supposed to be there, and I believe that he didn't show up. There was a rumor, and I never really got it clear. I believe that he didn't show up, but I also had heard that Vince had come in and said, you know, okay, you know, everyone here is fine, even though he didn't want any of them. I'm sure he didn't want any of them there, because originally Vince was asked to be on the show, and nobody expected he would be on the show. And it wasn't until, like, literally, you know, we're in there, and it's like Vince came. So I think in Vince's way, he wanted to, you know, see what would happen if he was there. And because I think the show, to be after doing a radio show with the same cast of characters, it got really out of control. And then they were obviously all listening. And I think they thought that if Vince was there, it wouldn't get so out of control. And wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't be so adamant on, you know, so hard on Vince, although plenty of them still were. But anyway, when Vince came, one of the stories that I heard was that Vince said, you know, anyone but Schultz. So, but I don't know which of those two is the accurate story, but Schultz wasn't there. But Schultz could have been volatile more than, you know, Schultz could have been volatile. Billy Jack Haynes, who was not there, I think possibly could have been volatile. But Bruno could have been, but they kept them apart. So, you know, that was the deal that day.
All right, to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
John from Arkansas, and I called in mainly just to thank you guys for the work that you guys do on The Observer, and I've been a subscriber now for about 2 years, and I have to say it's been the best money I've spent. I love the historical pieces that are done and the great news updates and everything that goes along with the site. It's probably been, bar none, my favorite gift I've given to myself in the last few years.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Anything else, John?
Billy Robinson. I loved the Billy Robinson story that he did because I'm big into the whole catch style of wrestling, and so I loved the piece that Dave did.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I loved doing that piece on Billy Robinson. You know, I'd met him a couple of times, and I think that he's one of those guys both kind of in an MMA standpoint, but even more in a pro wrestling standpoint, who was a really big star and an absolutely phenomenal performer that because he came, his prime was before 1984, a lot of people just don't realize what a big star and great wrestler that he was unless you kind of watch his history. And also, I mean, this guy was a phenomenal wrestler. I mean, he was beating, you know, Olympic medalists as a teenager. And he, you know, he could have won an Olympic medal, but he turned pro, I think, at the age of like 19. So he never had that chance to go to the Olympics. But he wasn't he was an elite Olympic caliber wrestler who then became an incredible submission guy. But there was no, you know, MMA. There was no grappling competition in his day. I don't. He loved boxing. I mean, the problem was he lost an eye in a childhood accident. So I wonder if he would ever been able to be sanctioned in this, you know, as far as the MMA goes. But I, you know, he's one of those guys where you look back and go, you know, he perhaps if there had been an MMA, I mean, Billy Robinson would have been, you know, light heavyweight or, you know, probably light heavyweight, you know, champion or certainly a star. I mean, he had incredible knowledge. I mean, when you talk to the people who've been trained by him, and I know, you know, Josh Barnett and Shayna Baszler, Harry Smith, I mean, they speak very reverently about him. And, you know, and those people have all trained with, you know, people all over the world. And, you know, Josh Barnett in particular, he'll really sing the praises of Billy as his best coach, actually.
I want to thank John very much for the call and the kind words. Speaking of your historical pieces, I don't know if I've ever asked you this before, but I know that when you were a kid, you were kind of into politics, obviously you're into sports and then into wrestling. You write history pieces as if you're a fan of bios, history. I mean, were you ever into that? Do you read I can't imagine you reading anything other than wrestling on the side. But how did you get into writing such great historical pieces?
You know, the thing is that when I feel like it's kind of like, a guy who's doing a movie, and my mentality is try to get my mind into the place where these guys were, you know, the time and place. That's the attempt, you know, is to kind of like do that and then kind of write from that perspective. I mean, that's why, like, a lot
of
times...
But did you have, like, books or something that influenced you? Did you read some great bio of somebody one day and just went, man, I could do this for wrestling?
No, nothing like that. It was just following wrestling for a long time. And also, one of the things about the wrestling when I grew up is, because it was so territorial, you know, your culture, part of what made the wrestling click was the culture at the time. That's why when I always talk to people about, you know, matches and everything, I was like, you know, wrestling's about time and place. It's not universal. People want, you know, to be universal and go, oh, you know, I'm watching some match from 1972 in, you know, Minneapolis, and it's not really very good. And it's like, you know, unless you're in 1972 in Minneapolis and you've been watching the TV that leads to this, you really don't know what you're talking about. I mean, it's like when, you know, I mean, like, I can watch it and, you know, I can enjoy it or not enjoy it. And I mean, I watched when New Japan World started, I started watching a lot of that stuff. But I also, the stuff I watched, I also was able to, you know, kind of bring myself back to that time and place when a lot of it was because I was following, you know, Japan, and I had gone to Japan enough to where I did understand in my prior, you know, years and years ago what it really was. So I think it helped me with it. And you can watch it and go, yeah, you know, these guys are ahead of their time and things like that. Or this work is good. You know, it looks good today, or this match. But when you said like this match is great, but the people didn't understand, you know, whatever. It, you know, wrestling is, you know, I think one of the things is Kowalski once told me that he did something, and I don't even remember what it was, but he was wrestling in like the Northeast, and then he went to Vancouver, BC or somewhere, and with the same guy, it was Bearcat Wright. And anyway, they did the same match, he did the same things and all this. And in one place, it was they tore the house down. And in the other place, different part of the world, they didn't care at all, you know. And it was just, it's just like we had the same thing. And it's just like because it's, you know, the whole culture was different in different parts of the country. And you've got to work, you know, these guys were working for their audience on that day. They weren't working for somebody in 2015, you know what I mean, when they were working a match in 1962, if actually there's some, you know, tape available of a 1962 match or a 1982 match for that matter. So, you know, that's the attempt. And I mean, I know with like a lot of the guys, I try to talk to people who were around in those eras when things were going on to kind of help me understand, because that's, I think that's a lot of the key, especially when you got a guy like a JYD or Crusher that were really pretty big cultural figures in their part of the country in a way that the wrestlers can't be today and aren't today because they were just so much more mainstream then, which is funny because people don't think that's the case. And it actually, you know, the big wrestling stars in the key places in the 70s were, you know, when they were going to your city, you know, every week or every month and on TV every week on TV shows that did, you know, just incredible numbers if you would compare them to today. They're really a lot more part of the culture than the guys today are.
Let's take one more call here. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's Jordan in New York City.
What's up, Jordan?
I want to talk about the NXT training and see if you guys have any information. What I want to talk about is Albert. I've heard you guys talk a little bit about the pros and cons of having a guy who's actually drawn money teach these guys, and I wonder if you have any more opinions on why they haven't had somebody who's actually gone through their system and made it, like, say, Booker T, who is obviously a trainer, or any other assortment of guys that they have, like Daniel Bryan, who's trained guys, they could possibly hook up with Taz again. Is there any thought or talk of having somebody that's actually made it through their system teach the new guys how to work?
Let me actually say one thing real quick, Dave, about this drawing money deal. Obviously, there are guys who are so charismatic that, you know, Rock, for example, this man just draw his charisma. He's a money tree. He's a huge star. But a lot of this drawing money is the machine around you in WWE. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of guys in WWE that if the company were behind them, they'd draw a lot of money. But you have the machine do what the machine has done to a Daniel Bryan, and all of a sudden, they're going to find ways to explain that this guy wasn't drawing a lot of money. So
they gave Daniel Bryan great opportunities, but they were never sold on him. There's two different things. And I mean, it's he didn't knock it out of the park in a way where it forced their hand. It was kind of like Punk in the sense that the results were ambiguous. If the results were out of control, they may have gone all the way. But, you know, it really wasn't out of control in the sense that, like, when he was on TV, were the numbers really peaking higher than anyone else? If they were, they would, you know, they would still find a way to say, well, he can't get past this level, even if he had. But it's, you know, but it's not like Daniel Bryan still was never like The Rock. You know what I mean? And Daniel Bryan was pushed really, really hard when it was, when they, you know, at certain points in time. I mean, they did give him a main event at SummerSlam, and made him, you know, and it very much built a show around the idea of him getting his big shot. WrestleMania was a fluke in the sense that it wasn't their plan. But once it became their plan, he was the centerpiece of it. And the show did well, and obviously...
But my point is more, if you're the head trainer, your job is to teach these guys how to wrestle. There are plenty of guys that can later teach you how to draw money. The machine being behind you is a big aspect of drawing money. But first, you got to learn how to work.
Well, the thing is that a great wrestler doesn't necessarily make a great trainer, because if you look at it in any other sports, like trainers and managers and things like that, the best trainers are often guys who are, I think that the general thing that I would say is that the best coaches were guys who were marginally talented, but had to work so hard and had to learn so much to overcome their talents, and ended up being, you know, they may not have even been major leaguers in baseball, but they were minor leaguers in baseball, but they were not like gifted athletes. Whereas a gifted athlete, you know, he can make a lot of mistakes and things like that. And also, you know, and it may not have to study the technical aspects, because usually, and of course there's exceptions to every rule when saying that. But I actually think that Daniel Bryan would make a phenomenal trainer. I really do, because it's like, to me, he epitomizes actually what it takes, in the sense that I would rather have an overachiever as a trainer than, you know, Dwayne Johnson, who, you know, had this phenomenal look and you know, just, you know, was a great talker and may be able to, you know.
Actually, we got to head to a break, Dave, but thanks again, and we'll be back in just a moment with more Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. If you are a fan of the paranormal, UFOs, Bigfoot, all sorts of topics of that nature, tonight I will be hosting After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. It airs at 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern, every Friday night, and you can listen to it either through artbell.com, or if you go to the front page of WrestlingObserver.com, you see that big microphone. Scroll down where it says After Dark Radio, Dark Matter Radio Network, 2 a.m. Eastern. Click that link to the Dark Matter Radio Network. And tonight, I will be interviewing a guest talking Bigfoot. 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 Pacific. So make sure you check that out. Big weekend on the website as well. Wrestling and MMA-wise, UFC 185 tomorrow. Dave Meltzer and I are going to be up after the show, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. Also have a Brian and Vinny show coming up on Sunday. Talking New Japan on Access, which airs every Friday night. Probably TNA Impact instead of SmackDown this week. So make sure you check that out if you're a subscriber as well. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, not only will it be available in about 5 minutes for subscribers, but there is a replay tonight on the Sports Byline USA Network, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. If you listen to this show every day, you might want to check out iHeartRadio. It streams through iHeart every day on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, as well as TuneIn Radio. That is in addition, of course, to Sports Byline USA affiliate, Sirius Satellite Radio, American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, etc. And we will be back live on Sunday with a brand new two-hour show, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Check out WrestlingObserver.com for more. I want to thank Dave Meltzer, Mike Sempervivi, all the folks at Sports Byline USA, and of course all of you, the listeners, for a great week here on the program. Back on Sunday, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.